This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And it is now the 9th year of Joy on Paper. Can you believe that? My goodness, this is so exciting. Again, I want to thank everybody for all of the lovely emails I got and the flowers and the gifts. And just thank you so much because I've been having a lot of fun this week. And now, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper an author. I've been looking forward to talking to him because it is about a subject that I could talk about for hours. The new book that he's written is called The Ayatollah Takedown, and it is by Matt Scott. And I am so happy to welcome you, Matt, because this is book three, and I didn't have you on for book one and two, but I've read them, and it's nice to have you here today.
Thank you so much for having me on, Patsy, and happy anniversary for the show.
Well, thank you. It's been a joy these past 8 years. I've talked to so many authors that I love and that interest me, and I call them my golden threads. So many of the authors that I speak to actually... I either have been to the places where they're writing about, or I've met the people that they're writing about. And in your case, of course, a combination. This book is, of course, it's the Ayatollah Takedown, the third book in this series, Surviving the Lion Den books. And, it's exciting for me because I lived in Iran, and so I relate to a lot of things that you've written about in here. For me... talking about Iran is a joy because I was married there, and
wow.
You mentioned the American Embassy where I was married. So,
oh my goodness!
Yeah, so a lot of things, of course, relate to me in this book, and the story is fascinating and it is timely because we're talking here about the Ayatollah takedown. We're talking about Iran, and this is a time that. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I wanted to speak to you is I think it's so important. I want Americans to understand a little bit more about Iran. It is going to be in the news big time in the next few months, and I think it is very important that people understand a little bit more about Iran.
Yeah, that was really one of my main reasons for the subject matter and putting the plot in Iran. I was really influenced by Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code, the way he took the readers on a tour of Europe. And when I look at Iran, it just seems to me that a lot of Westerners, especially Americans, don't really know a lot about it, other than the fact that the government has a lot of hatred for us. But within the borders of Iran, there are some very sweet people who do want peace, and the economic sanctions are really hurting them, but they're having to live within their means and kind of below the radar of the Ayatollah. And I wanted to take the readers on a tour of Iran through the eyes of my protagonist Kurt Carruthers in the first novel, in Surviving the Lion's Den. So that was really my motivation in trying to, explore it. I was kind of aided by the fact that despite Iran having a lot of restrictions on the internet and Facebook and Twitter, Instagram and YouTube, they are very, maybe not very, but certainly more lenient on. So I was able to take a look at a lot of the locations because, so many people have obviously cell phones, but certainly dash cams and things like that. So it allowed me to go on a little bit of a tour and to take the readers on that tour.
And I toured it by myself, traveling very much by myself on Iranian buses. Of course, mm-hmm. I called it Persia at the time because right. I liked that name better. But I would travel alone. It was a wonderful place to live in. I had a fantastic time in Iran. And so I'm glad that now people, I want them to open their eyes to a little bit about Iran, the history of Iran, and about the people, because as you said, sweet, they are wonderful people, and there are so many beautiful mm-hmm. things to see in Iran, and everything that's Absolutely. Happened is ridiculous. None of this had to happen. We should be good friends with Iran. So let's talk a little bit about the book, and then I'll talk more about Iran, because I really want people to understand the importance of Iran to our future.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So this story, I noticed that I got a kick out of it. It's called The Takedown, and which is sort of a little homage to Brad Thor, because he wrote a book called Takedown. It was his fifth book, and I love that book.
And it's kind of funny. I came up with the title, The Ayatollah Takedown, and when I got the call from my literary agent saying that my publisher was interested, I had only really intended to, you know, write Lion's Den and then kind of see what happened. Well, the publisher wanted a series, so I had nothing more than a couple of other ideas for books 2 and 3. And my literary agent was like, well, what are the titles of the next two? Well, The Iranian Deception, book 2, I kind of already had in my head, but I hadn't even thought about book 3 yet. I was like, well, give me a second. So I went over to my bookshelf, and I was kind of looking at the books I have on Iran, and on the bookshelf was, you know, Brad Thor's Takedown. So I started putting 2 and 2 together. So I was like, Ayatollah Takedown, that's what I'm going with. So it's funny that you referenced Brad Thor's book, because I got a little bit of an assist from that book in terms of the title.
Well, it is wonderful because, as I said, I think it's book 4 or 5, and it is a Scott Harvath book, and I love that series. Brad Thor is brilliant.
Yeah.
And a wonderful,
a
wonderful
champ.
Series. So the minute I saw the title, I said, I have a feeling. I had a feeling about that.
Yeah. I got a little bit of a stiff, but, you know, the wording works. You know, the Ayatollah Takedown, I think it's something that just kind of pops.
And the story pops. And I can tell you there are some really exciting moments in this book. There's a couple of shootouts that are really great. I don't even want to tell people it is so good. And there's a particular scene that I love, and it involves animals, but I'm not going to tell people what animal. I want it to come as a surprise to people, but it is not an animal you expect in a thriller. And so I got a kick out of that. There's a lot of things I got a kick out of. So tell us about the main characters in this book, because you have really 4 main characters and then a lot of characters around them.
Yeah, my main protagonist is Ben Thrasher. He's the CIA operative on the ground. He's the guy that he's kind of got a very quirky emotional personality, but he's got a very high functioning brain. So it was kind of really a lot of fun to play with him. I put him in book 1 and just kind of introduced people, and then I decided I liked him so much I wanted to use him in books 2 and 3. So he's the main star, but I also have, you know, Beth Jenkins. She is kind of she's technically Thrasher's boss, but she's also the one that keeps him a little bit grounded and tends to be less emotional. So she works, you know, kind of the deals with some of the PMOI and some of the other Iranians, and just because she tends to be a little bit more too calmer. But, you know, in the Ayatollah Takedown, you know, I don't think that, you know, regime change is going to happen without some assistance on the inside. That's just my opinion on it. You know, when we did the 53, when the CIA did the coup of Mohammad Mossadegh in 53, I mean, it was a total CIA operation. And I think, you know, had worked in the short term, but in the long term, it had, you know, some really disastrous effects. So if it's going to happen this time, my vision was that it had to happen from within the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. And if you look at the way the Revolutionary Guard has just gained power over the course of the last couple of decades, it's very much organized, kind of like the SS was with the Nazis. They just, if you have control of them, then you can take over the coup. So my main character for the Revolutionary Guard that's kind of doing all the work behind the scenes and under the nose of the Supreme Leader is Ramin Lajani, and he was a lot of fun to play with. But you know, then the villain is going to be the Supreme Leader Marzban Stradel, who has a chromosome 6 deficiency where he cannot feel anything physically that harms him. So he was kind of my version of I guess I'm a big Batman fan, so he was kind of my version of the Joker, I guess. But you know, he was a lot of fun to play with. And then you have the local Iranians of Farad and Danya, that you kind of see how they operate under the rule of the Ayatollah, and they're kind of the inside man.
Well, of course, you know, for me, it's a fascinating story. I live in hope that they will be free one day, and perhaps sooner than we expect, because what people don't know, when I remember one of the first things when I mentioned to somebody in a letter, you know, I'm in Iran, I'm here, and I get a letter back, and they say, oh, well, how, you know, do you ride the camels? And I said, no, I said, they didn't understand. And at that time, of course, Tehran was such a wonderful, bustling city, so fantastic. Wow. One of the things that people never could believe when I said, it is so cold here, because the winters in Tehran are very cold, and I had to buy myself a sheepskin coat, which I still have. It is you know, it's absolutely fantastic. I don't know if we're allowed to wear sheepskin coats anymore, but I keep it because I just love it. And it was cold in Tehran in the wintertime. And, you know, Americans would always say, oh, well, it's a desert. No, it is so much more.
It is
absolutely a beautiful country. The countryside is beautiful. The mountains are fantastic. And so that's why I wanted people to understand a little bit more about Iran. And at that time, again, people don't understand that it was so vibrant, and all of the girls, all of my Iranian girlfriends, were wearing mini skirts. We were all wearing mini skirts. And they all had jobs. They were, you know, bank clerks. I worked at the Hotel Intercontinental, and I had I had an office in the Hotel Intercontinental. And I hired Iranian girls, and of course they were all wearing mini skirts. The girls behind the check-in desk would be wearing mini skirts, and we were all having a fantastic time. And in Iran, we used to work from 7 to 1 in the morning, 7 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon. Then we went home for 3 hours and came back to work the second shift. And then supper would be at 9 o'clock, and dancing would start at 10, and we'd be dancing all night. We had lots of discos, beautiful discos.
Yeah, yeah.
And people don't understand that that's the life that the Iranians were having, and it was getting better and better. Every month that I was there, things were improving. And then this happened, where they beat girls to death for showing their hair. It is not right. And all of this that happened was so unnecessary. And to let these people take over the country was a disaster.
Yeah, it certainly was. And I think a lot of it stems from the fact that, you know, as the Shah, you know, aged, you know, things stayed vibrant in Iran, as you stated, but you know he definitely gave the Savak a little bit too much power to kind of crush those who were his detractors. I think it just kind of fed into the small percentage of people that were just upset at how westernized Iran had become. And eventually, you know, when Ayatollah Khomeini came back, you know, he was living just outside Paris at the time. It just became obvious that, you know, the Shah just was not the leader that they wanted him to be.
So much depended on the leadership that we had at the time, too. It was a disastrous time and a disaster for the people. And I don't think we've been strong enough in supporting them. They want a regime change, I'm sure. I guarantee it. I still have friends in Iran. So it is, that's why I was happy to read your books, because it's partly that Americans don't understand sometimes these other countries. It's like most Americans didn't know where the heck the Ukraine was until we have a war.
Right.
You know, it's wonderful to be, you know, in America, and we have our ideas and we have our strengths, but one of them is not paying attention to some of these places in the world that are going to explode. And so that's why I thought when you wrote these books, although you haven't been to Iran, right? You haven't snuck in there, have you?
No. I think my wife would have a problem with it if I did. I mean, I would love to go, but getting there is not the problem. Getting back.
Yeah. And especially now that you've written these books.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go in with my, you know, Americans can travel, and some Americans do, and I'm tempted to go. I mean, they can't do anything to me anymore. So I'm tempted to go simply because I would love to walk in the places where I walked and go to the places where I went, and mostly to eat the food. The food is the best. I don't know if you have any Iranian friends who cook for you, but the food in Iran is incredible. It's so good that I close my eyes and I can just, I get a thrill thinking about it.
Yeah, I was, I don't have any Iranian friends, although I've made some acquaintances in some of the free Iran protests that have been happening around Charlotte. But, you know, one of the things that I'd always heard when I did my research for Lion's Den was, you know, how good the food was. So I went on Amazon and I ordered a Persian cookbook, and I cooked a dish. I can't remember what it was, but I started doing more research on the food in Iran, and just because I wanted to put that element into the novel, so that people wouldn't think that, you know, it was just bread and rice. And there's one chapter in Lion's Den where, you know, Kirk was sitting down with one of the commanders of the Revolutionary Guard. They were giving him one last meal before they thought they were going to kill him. So I thought that was a good opportunity to kind of talk about the food just a little bit.
Well, you know, you have not had yet the delight of tasting kalepache. Now, this is an Iranian delicacy. I want you to go, actually, there's a place where you can try it. So go to Los Angeles, and there is a place.
Okay.
It's not well known, but I will tell you that if you go there, you will smell it before you get there to the food.
Okay.
It's called kalepache. It is, and we used to go in the mornings at 4 o'clock in the morning. It was a meal for truck drivers. It was sort of like the onion soup that the French would eat at 4 in the morning. And kalepache,
okay,
at 4 o'clock in the morning, you could smell it, and as you would walk over there, you knew what was going on, and that's where all the truck drivers and the morning people, the taxi drivers before the day started, would be eating.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to go there. I won't tell you what it is, but there is a place in Los Angeles. Just go and say to some Iranian, they have lots of them. Where can I get kalapache? And I think you will be quite amazed by it.
I will do that. I'm planning on going to BoucherCon in San Diego in the fall.
So oh, well, then.
I'm flying into L.A., so
okay.
I will go there.
I'm thinking about going there, too. I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to make it, but definitely go to... Just ask an Iranian, where can I get kalapache? And you will be amazed.
I will do that.
In addition to all the kebabs, the different kinds of kebabs, they have different kebabs. And you mentioned bread. Iranian bread mm-hmm. is so fantastic. It rivals French bread. And they have varieties. They have different varieties. And each bakery on every street, you'd have a corner bakery, and they would make mm-hmm. the bread, and everyone was a different bakery. So, I mean, one bread, a bakery made one kind of bread, lavash, another one made Barbary, and you would go there. And the lovely thing about these bakeries, the workers slept in the ovens at night.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes. The massive ovens. And they would sleep in the ovens at night. But, boy, when they started making that bread, it was so good. It was so good. You could not believe. And also their butter was incredible. And that rivaled Dutch butter. So lots of things. I hope that you'll maybe now you'll sneak into Iran just to start eating the food.
I'd love to be honest with you. I really would. There's a reason I chose to explore, and there's definitely some things that I would love to experience on my own. But one of the documentaries that I watched for my research was definitely detailed the bread and butter. It's funny that you brought that up.
We won't talk about how they make rice with saffron. It's just too much. We could go on forever. So, you know, I think it's fantastic that you've written this series. And it's right now it's three books. Are you going to continue with this subject? Are you branching off a little?
It's to be determined. My contract with my publisher was for three books. So I haven't thought about what I'm going to do next. I guess I thought about doing something with North Korea, but you know, once you're a writer, you're always a writer, so the creative juices always keep flowing. So I've got some other ideas of what I can do with Ben Thrasher in Iran. You know, I can't give it away, but the way I ended the book, the actual takedown, the way I ended it.
Yeah, don't tell people, but you
say,
left it open. Let's just say we left it open.
I left it open.
And
yeah,
we can continue with that.
That's
and
true. That's absolutely true.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously you're having fun doing the research and the writing, mm-hmm. and that's exciting for you. So when after you did when you did the Lion's Den, of course that was your first one. And that led you to the next one. And with book two, how did you feel about that when you started that one?
Under pressure is probably the best term, because you know you never want to fall into a sophomore slump. But you know. My publisher kind of put me on a little bit of a tight timeline, so I pretty much had to go right into it. But you know, the idea that I had of you know trying to find a way to have the Iranians have a connection to the Nazis was always something that I really wanted to explore. So I think it was such a big creative bucket that I could really you know take anything out of. That it made it a lot of fun and kind of made it flow much better than I think I anticipated when I started writing it.
And I thought the word deception in the title, again, that was perfect because Iranians are so good at deception. They are unlike, and again, this is something I want people to know. Although we have this strange relationship suddenly, Iranians are not Arabs. Are not Arabs at all. They are not Arabs at all. They are so clever. They can be so, they're so good at deception. And the wonderful thing about Iranian deception is that they actually don't brag about it. They are very happy to be deceptive and keep it to themselves. And that's scarier. You prefer people who will brag about it because you can find them and you can get them. But the ones who don't brag, those are usually the most dangerous people.
Absolutely. And that was the motivation for, you know, the new Supreme Leader when I wrote the Iranian deception and put him in the Ayatollah takedown. So Marzban Sherdell was very, very clever, very, very deceptive. And when you add in the chromosome 6 deficiency that he had, it kind of makes him, I wanted him to seem, you know, almost to the point where, you know, you can't bring him down. But where there's a will, there's a way. But that was the deception, the deceptiveness of Iranians was definitely on my mind when I created that character.
Well, that's what I love, because one thing about Iranians, when they're friends, they are loyal. They are so loyal. It's unbelievable. And that's what happened with me. My friends, my Iranian friends, were so loyal. And really, you know, I was one of the last ones to get out of Iran. I was on the last flight out of Iran.
Oh, wow.
And it was a scary flight. I can tell you, it was a scary flight, Pan Am flight, and we were all terrified until we got out of Iranian airspace because we didn't know what was going to happen.
Absolutely. They could turn that plane around.
We didn't know. Yeah, so, but boy, oh boy, did they break out the champagne when... We all drank. They gave it to everybody. I mean, we were all first class, the whole plane. Everybody was drinking like crazy when we got out of there. But
that's such a cool story.
It was. But the loyalty of the Iranians who would help and who would do anything to help us were unbelievable and so good. But on the other hand, if they're your enemies, they can be very, very bitter enemies. So,
So I mean, that's why the coup is still, the coup from 1953 is still on everyone's mind. I mean, they have their memories. You know, they
well, they remember long back. they go all the way back to Alexander. So, and it's funny. One of the people I knew was a general who was 6'6". This is a real Iranian general. He was 6 foot six, and he came from the part of eastern Iran where they have villages with people with blue eyes. They are the remnants of Alexander's troops who went through that area.
Right.
And and the people have blue eyes. And you have a general, you have a tall general in your book, and I thought, yes, I can relate to that.
it's kind of funny about Alexander. You know, he in a lot of places they don't even like to mention Alexander the Great in Iran.
I know,
because you know he just, you know, the way he plundered and stole from there. But His legacy in there is definitely present in more ways than one.
And of course, I love that you write about the road between Tehran and Isfahan Shiraz, which I drove many times, and down to Takhta Jamshid, which is Persepolis. Alexander can be a touchy point with them, I will tell you that the blue-eyed Iranians are strong people.
I bet. I can imagine.
You don't want to mess with them. So a lot of things that I just got a kick out in your book, and I hope that people will read it, get a little, you know, information on Iran, understand the difficulties, because in the next few years, we're going to have some real difficulties, because there is going to be a regime change, I'm sure of it. And
I think so, too.
That's why I put off my trip, because I don't want to be there when it happens.
No, it's going to be a long process when it does.
Yeah, I love the, by the way, the prison break. I can relate to that in real life, let's say real life situation, about a prison break in Iran. So I just got a kick out of so much of it. I think you've done
thank you so much.
I think you've done a great job, Matt Scott. And you know, just keep it up. Keep up the good work, and I think that people will find a lot to read and hear. And as I said, some of the action scenes. I was ducking my head when the bullets were flying.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. The action scenes are always the most fun to write. You just have to. I just look at it as, you know, a process, and you just have to kind of plan things out in your head. But you know, reading other authors like you know, Vince Flynn and Brad Thor, you know, you tend to kind of absorb what they've written over the years, which definitely aids my own creative process. But yeah, thanks so much for the compliment on that. I really appreciate it.
Okay, well, just keep up the good work. And I know that your website is Matt Scott Books, right?
MattScottBooks.com, yes, ma'am.
And they can find out more about you there, find out more about your books. They can start with this book, the new release, which is The Ayatollah Takedown. And we can cross our fingers, and then they can go back and read book one and book two. There's, you know, it's wonderful. That's the great thing about books nowadays. When you find an author that you love, you can go back and start at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the way I wrote this. I mean, it is a series, but you can still read it out of order.
Exactly,
and still get everything out of it.
I think so, too. Again, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. I'm just always thrilled to talk about Iran. As you can see, I get excited just on the subject because it was a wonderful part of my life. As I said, you know, when you get married in a country, you get really thrilled because, mm-hmm. you know, I was an expat there for quite a few years as I worked at the Hotel Intercontinental, which I loved, absolutely loved. Mm-hmm. Fantastic years and wonderful people. And everybody, all my listeners, get Matt Scott's book and learn something about Iran and be prepared to watch the news with a little bit more understanding of the situation in Iran.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks again for being on Joy on Paper. Your joy, Matt.
Thanks, Patsy, and happy anniversary.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye now.
Have a good
one. All right. Okay, the Ayatollah Takedown. We can wish and we can dream. And we can be prepared because, I didn't mention to him about the caves. I know he wrote about the caves. Iran is so diverse. There's a countryside, there's a desert, but there's the mountains, and there are these marvelous, marvelous caves in Iran that they are tourist attractions, which unfortunately American tourists can't go to now, but once things change, I think Iran will be a great place for tourism because of the diversity of it. And as I said, the food. I just have to I will probably make gourmet sabzi today just because I need something Iranian. Okay, we're going to have a book buzz and then we're going to be commercials and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. Something that I loved to go to every year in elementary school was the book fair they would have in the school's library. And I know so many other children were excited to go just like me. Another child who was excited about their school's book fair was Layla King, the main character from the book Layla and the Missing Dimes, written by Chastity Williams and illustrated by Whimsical Designs by CJ. Layla and the Missing Dimes is a story that promotes friendship, truth, and honesty, and it's dedicated to the author's daughter, Layla Chase Diane King, who passed away. In Layla and the Missing Dimes, third grader Layla King is excited to go to the book fair knowing exactly what she wants. But when she goes to pay for her item, she notices that she's short of a dime, and it makes you wonder, where could it be? When going to the book fair myself, it was always scary going to the register wondering if I had enough to buy the items I wanted, but thankfully, I was always glad to know that I could take home the books I wanted and read them again and again and again. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for my next guest to call in, because this is going to be so much fun for me. And is he on? Okay. Well, I am always happy to talk about a Nat Geo Kids book, and today I get to talk about Zeus the Mighty, The Voyage on the Odyssey, and the author is Crispin Boyer. Hi, Crispin.
Hi, Patsy. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
Okay. Well, let me count the ways. How much do I love thee? I can count them on one hand. I will tell you, the first one you gave me fleas.
Perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. And we could go on. And now, it's the oddest thing. So I don't know. Maybe I'm a little odd. You know, does everyone at National Geographic understand that I have crowned you King Ishgalak, the mighty?
Yes, every they do, and actually, I ask them to refer to me with that title from now on. It's really the most fitting.
It is.
And I appreciate you crowning me with that title.
Well, and I'm thinking of making a crown for you out of seashells and pearls. Because wouldn't that be perfect?
I would never take it off.
Yes, and that is a photo that we could have in the book, you know, because really you are the mighty king who tells tales, tall tales.
I'm sure it would fit in the Greek mythology somehow. So it all fits. It all works. Sounds perfect.
It does. It does. And there, and you're in Hawaii. I mean, where else would a king want to be? Right?
It is. Yeah. It's that's where surfing was invented by a king. So yeah, it all makes sense.
Okay, it does make sense. I think it's very apropos for you because you are somebody very special. And this new book, oh, I get such a kick out of this new book, number 5. Well, you know now, so that's one hand, and now I'm waiting to do the other hand because you're going to continue writing this because I know it's so popular. So tell us about The Voyage on the Odyssey. And I really like how you have Callie and Artie in here. Tell us this story.
Well, so yeah, every book in the series covers a different Greek myth. And like you were saying, the first book was The Quest for the Golden Fleece, which gave everyone fleas. We covered the Minotaur myth in the second book. The third book had Hercules. The fourth book dealt with the underworld. So it's time now that we got to book 5, the last finger on your hand, to cover Homer's Odyssey. And that's why it's got kind of the tongue-twisting title. So this book's adventure takes the 10-year epic Homer's Odyssey and condenses it into one night of misadventures for the Zeus and the hamster and all of his animal friends. And like you were saying, there's everyone's put in a kind of different positions this time. This time, Zeus actually goes underwater which is the realm of his rival Poseidon, and they face a new threat, this shape-changing monster named Proteus, who kind of confuses the whole group. He turns into other members of the Olympians. No one knows who's who. Up is down. Cats are friends with dogs. It's crazy.
I know. And it had me going, oh, you're so clever. You're brilliant. That's all I can say about you.
Oh, thanks, Patsy. I can't wait to get this crown. Take my new author photo with it.
I'm going to start working on it. You know, we have seashells here. You know, I'm on the coast here, Clearwater, Florida. So I can get my hands. I'm going to walk out to the beach today, and I'm going to start collecting these shells, and I'm going to start putting them together, and I'll send you a crown. How about that?
I grew up there, so I grew up in St. Pete. So I'm very familiar with
Yeah, I was going to mention that. So you know the beach here. So yeah, so there I'm going to walk along here, Madeira Beach. I'm going to walk down Indian Rocks Beach, and I'm going to pick up all the little ones, and I'm going to put them together. I'm a real crafty person. I love to do crafts. So
I can tell. Yeah,
I've got my glue gun. I am glue gun will travel. So I know that the people at National Geographic will love it. I think you're the only king working for them.
I don't know. There might be some others. I have to check the staff register and see how many kings or maybe there's some emperors. Definitely a lot of queens and barons and.
But you're at the top. You're at the top because you're going to have the crown. So, you know,
that's right.
You're having so much fun with this series.
Yeah, so it was always intended to be a 7-book series, so we're going to see what adventures are next, so you'll at least get the 2 fingers on your other hand.
Oh, no, we're going to make it more. I think there's enough in mythology, my goodness. You never know it's not just Greek mythology because you never know, they might have somebody from another place joining them, and you've got material here forever.
I think so, and actually someone actually suggested a good idea to me that, you know, so Zeus is a little hamster that lives in a pet rescue center, and maybe at the end of the last book in this series he could be adopted by a family that's like, I don't know, from Norway, and then they can rename him Thor, and then they can suddenly be the Norse mythology adventures.
Oh, not Norway. Do Finland. We have
Finland, okay.
We have the Kavala. So you have wonderful Finnish mythology. That's what I grew up on. So,
I'm going to take some notes. We're going to collaborate on this one.
That's it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're going to go on and on with this. We're going to have a really diverse mythology.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly will never run out of mythology, so that sounds good. All right, so I'm adapting the plan, so okay, we'll do Finland and got it.
Yeah, you have to do Finland, and then when you do your research, I can say huva beva to you, and you'll know what I'm saying to you.
Yeah, I'll actually know what you're talking about.
That's it. Well, I love your books, and are you getting the opportunity now to actually sometimes read in front of kids, meet kids again?
Well, I did it a few times, like through the pandemic, but you know it was always through Zoom. So maybe now that things cleared up, yeah, I can get out there, and certainly like locally in Hawaii. And I'm getting more feedback on the books from kids, and that's the best part. When I get like letters or emails, a lot of times it'll be from parents or from uncles or aunts, and they'll tell me, you know, that their niece or nephew, their favorite character is Ares, or you know, he's the god of war, and he's kind of crazy, and they like when he in one of the books he tastes these different rivers in the underworld and then experiences different emotions, and I seem to really enjoy that part. And that's based on real mythology too, because there were these different rivers that would someone make you go insane, someone make you sick, but Ares, you know, being a little pug dog, he's got an iron stomach, so he can handle that.
And of course, you have fun doing the research yourself and getting out all these ideas. The illustrations are lovely. I really enjoy them. So your illustrator is doing a great job. I just enjoy having these illustrations.
Yeah, Andy Elkerton, the illustrator, it's great because he's been part of the project since the beginning. So every book has the same illustrator, and it's all very consistent. You know, when you read a book when you're a kid before there's a movie about it, you kind of make up in your head what the characters look like. And then when the movie comes out, then all of a sudden you're just like, oh, okay, the main character is Tom Hanks or Harrison Ford. You have like an actor. And that's the way I was when I wrote the first book. I just had in my head what Zeus and Athena the cat and Demeter the grasshopper all look like. But then when Andy drew them, I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's better than what's in my head. So now they just look like Andy's illustrations in my head whenever I'm putting the stories together.
Yeah, well, I think the kids will enjoy it, and the way the book is laid out. Of course, it's a Nat Geo book, so what can we say? It's perfect. You know, the quality of the paper, the production values are fantastic.
Yeah, that's one great thing about working for National Geographic, just they put a lot of resources into it. Yeah, the I always get excited when I get a new copy of it, because you know the cover stock's all shiny and
I love the cover, and the cover one, this, the design, he's done a terrific job. I like that.
Oh yeah, this is my favorite cover, just because you know, in this story Zeus goes on a high seas adventure and he builds his boat out of like a, you know, a dog bowl. He basically uses whatever he finds in the pet shop.
Very
so
clever.
He's got a dog bowl as the hull of the boat, and then a frisbee as the sail, and then Andy, the illustrator, took that and actually drew it and made it look almost seaworthy.
Exactly. We could get right on it. And, of course, sure. you could lead the way as the king. now, I noticed you dedicated it. Well, you know, it's fun. That's the nice thing for an author. You can dedicate your books to somebody that you care about. And whoever Paul Sr. is, I assume he is heroic.
Oh yeah, that was my grandfather, my mom's dad, and he was in World War II. Yeah,
yeah,
that's my pappy.
That's what I thought. I was thinking about that. I thought, well, I like that, and of course, my dad was in World War II, and it's great that you've honored him, and I think it's just so nice. I love to know when I see you know, a dedication who that person was that obviously touched your life and touched your heart.
Yeah, I always wonder that too when I read books and see that. It's always interesting. Yeah, it's just a little way to you know, let their memory live on or to honor them.
Exactly. So Paul Sr. would be very happy with this book, because this is a fun book and a great book for children. And as I always do, whenever I have a Nat Geo book for kids, I ask my listeners, please, if you don't, you know, buy this for every kid in your family, every kid you know, buy, you know, everyone needs one of these books. So you might be buying more than one. You send them, and the kids will love them. And then if you don't have a kid in your family, take a minute and go online and order one and send it to either a local children's hospital or to Shriners or St. Jude and send a kid a book. That is a true gift of love, because children in hospitals need books. And as when the pandemic started, they stopped sharing, and I don't think they're still sharing books. So when kids are in the hospital, they don't have that little bookmobile going around that they used to. So kids need books, and all you have to do, it takes 1 minute, get online and send the book directly to a hospital.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah, and books are such a great escape, too. You can just, your imagination can just wander as you're reading.
And you think about it, when kids are in hospital, they need all the distraction they can get, because, you know, they get shots and they get surgery and they're in pain so often. But to get a book like this, oh my, you'll forget everything when you get Zeus the Mighty, The Voyage on the Odyssey. I think it's a marvelous book, Crispin.
Well, thanks, Patsy. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. You know, it's building up, and every story in the series kind of builds on the previous one, and as the characters evolve, and the way it's like an ensemble cast of characters. And when it started out, Zeus the hamster was always had a big ego, but he was a lot more pig-headed and selfish and my way or the highway kind of guy. But this is now the fifth book, and he's really gotten the whole team has gotten into the spirit of teamwork, and you know, they're just going to continue to evolve as characters. So at this point, I really feel like I'm working with a little family too when I'm writing about them.
Well, that's what you've done. You've created this little family, and I think your readers will appreciate it. Personally, you know, I have seen recently, I had an opportunity to look at some books that they're using in schools today, and this is a series they should have. They should just have it in all the schools. I think one, you know, it's for the right age kid, they'll get involved in understanding mythology a little bit, and then as they grow older, maybe they'll, you know, they'll read more mythology, and if people were smart, they would, if educators were smart, they'd put Latin back in school, because Latin is a wonderful way to really, really form your mind, and then you can read a lot of mythology.
Well, yeah, I remember taking it when I was in school, and it's actually, you know, a good basis for learning other languages.
It is.
At least certain languages, too.
It is.
And it's just interesting. You really learn, like, where the words come from.
That's it. You learn so much. And Latin is so much fun. Oh, they're playing my music. I have to get out of here, Crispin. But I bow to you. I bow to you. I will curtsy to you. I have to curtsy to you because you are my king. And again, Crispin Boyer, I'm so happy you were on Joy on Paper today. And the name of the book is Zeus the Mighty, The Voyage on the Odyssey. Thank you for being here today.
Oh, as always, can't wait to come back on.
Okay. I'm waiting. I got another hand here. I need to start counting. Bye-bye now, Crispin. Bye.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Okay. I had to keep talking to him. I love this guy. He is so wonderful. He has a farm, and he has chickens, and I think he's got lambs. He's just fantastic. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. And I love his books. And really, really, if you have a minute and you have a few dollars extra, if you're going to do something good, order his book, send it to a hospital, and meanwhile, say something nice to somebody. I will say thank you, Big Ed, because Big Ed's nervous. I'm not out of here, and I have to be out of here. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. I have to go. Ed's going to, did you salute me, Ed? Oh, you have to salute me. I'm the general, and Crispin is the king. Bye bye now.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
It's time for the Thursday edition of Canada Calling, the news from home for vacationing Canadians. Pryor Smith speaking from Toronto. Thanks for joining us. Well, a little rain in the forecast for much of eastern Canada last night, overnight, again today. The washing a little of the snow away as a very gradual spring melt seems to be getting underway. Let's hope it stays gradual. The major snowstorms that have hit the U.S. Midwest in recent weeks may cause serious flooding problems along the Red River Valley in Manitoba in weeks ahead. It all depends on the spring melt. If it's gradual, things should be okay. But if there's a sudden melt, the above normal snowpack south of the border is going to result in major flooding north of the border, similar to what happened back in 19. In the news, in Ottawa, the welcome mat is out in preparation for President Biden's visit later on today, his sleepover tonight, and a full schedule of meetings and events tomorrow.